Blog Talk Radio.
You have room on your team for this little space, bitch. Football tonight. I'm your host, Todd, the True Group Reno, and of course, I will be joined shortly by Mr. R.C. Rizzo as we continue with our ninth season on, of course, Blog Talk Radio and doing Fantasy Football Tonight and giving you the best fantasy football advice in the known universe, and just make sure you guys understand we cannot see the whole universe with our telescopes. So there is much more. I cannot take credit for that part of the universe, but I will. On the part we can see. All right, we have a big show planned for you. A lot to talk about. Certainly some injured players you need to discuss, some bye weeks and some defenses if you need them, because there's some good defense like Cincinnati and Denver on the bye week this week. So we will discuss all that. I'm also going to discuss some of our listener leagues. I haven't been paying a great deal of attention to them on the show, and I will do that. Of course, first and foremost, as you know, I've been on the forefront of the DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports, controversy that's been going on, and I'm, you know, in last week after posting, just doing a simple little post to Mr. Jeff Manns, one of my former partners, you know, one of my recruits that I brought into Fantasy Football Tonight. We worked together for several years. Great guy, actually, you know, really smart expert, knows what he's talking about. But you know, we disagree on the Daily Fantasy Sports, and I think primarily we disagree because he's owned and operated by FanDuel, and that's why we disagree. That being said, that's a side note. But so last week, after our show, he posted on one of his, radio shows on Sirius that, you know, if you started Josh McDowell in one of your leagues, post it, whatever. Okay, so I did. You know, I actually did start Josh McDowell last week and in a league, or the week before that, excuse me, when he went crazy. And I just happened to be a 16-team expert league that I'm in and very deep league, and I had him and David Carr, and I went with him over Carr. And, you know, not only did I win, but Josh McDowell was outstanding. You know, it was, you know, I just chose it. That's what I do. I choose the best options I have, and that's what I did. So I posted, I tweeted him a photo of my lineup as requested, and you know, he didn't take too kindly to that because it's me. And we ended up getting into a little bit of a Twitter debate concerning, it ended up just dragging out the DFS. And now we have, and since then, you know, if you haven't seen, since not only I brought it up on the show, but I also just, you know, been going back and forth on some of the Twitterverse about it. But the end result is now, you know, DFS has been shut down in my home state, Nevada. And it's also, of course, previously it was not legal to operate in five other states just because of their own state laws. So now we have a bigger problem. And, of course, you know, not and just to let you know, I mean, I did get, assaulted by a few of Jeff's listeners. You know, he has like 18,000, you know, followers, and like three or four of them, I mean, what a gigantic jump that is, you know, decided to come after me. Most of them just, you know, professional gamblers who don't want to see DFS go because they're poker players who lost their poker rights and now they want to gamble on DFS. And they, of course, teed off on me, and I'm used to that, and I responded in kind, you know, with the array of assaults that I took from them. And I'm fine with that. You know, I'm fine taking it. But there's a bigger point. And by the way, you know, I've now noticed that I listened this morning. I haven't been listening to the Fantasy Sports Channel recently just because I've been busy. But this morning I saw, I don't know if it was a replay or if it was a live show, but they actually had a little panel going on talking about DFS and how they can make it more fun and less controversial. And I do have Mr. Rizza on the line. Are you there, Mr. RC?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'm not gonna dedicate more than 10 minutes to this, maybe even less than that. But you know, me and you, we've made our arguments concerning the DFS situation. As you know, as well as I know, it's, you know, it's been basically now blocked in six states. The FBI is investigating it. You know, the state attorney generals in both New Jersey and New York are investigating it. The bigger problem is, and me and you have just now talked about it, and you made some great points, but the bigger problem of it is what it's doing. This is where my crusade for it comes in. And if you want to, you know, tweet me about it, if you want to say positive things about DFS on my, you know, tweet it to me, or if you want to agree with me, I don't care. It's, you know, it's True Guru Farino, at True Guru Farino. Just go ahead and tweet me, you know, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions or take any beatings. I've already took them. Here's my case in point, RC, okay? It's not good for football, for fantasy football. You're going to make a case where it's not good for NFL. I'm going to make the case where it's not good for fantasy football because right now the current stats that the Washington Post put out that I mentioned to you was 1.5% of the people playing the daily fantasy sports contribute 40% of the dues, and they win 84% of the money. That's a big problem for the other 98.5%, the casual guys who are out there trying to have fun, trying to do exactly what they do in regular fantasy football, only they wanted to do it on a weekly basis so they didn't have to be, you know, so smart and so clever throughout an entire season. And now you have it where, you know, now that they're out there doing that, they're losing their money. And that's a big problem for them. And now they're leaving. And what's happened is you have this new, you know, every year you have new people coming into the fantasy sports realm, and those people try to enjoy the fantasy sports for what it's, you know, for the fun that it's supposed to be, and they're not getting that, and then they're going to leave. And a stat that I, you know, and again, somebody, I think, laughed at this stat, but this is actually a factual stat that currently DraftKings and FanDuel are spending about roughly about $1,000 to acquire a customer. That's through advertising, that's through sponsorships, that's through commercials, whatever you want to call it. They're, you know, basically all advertising. They are trying to acquire customers, and the average amount of money they're making off each customer is about $200. So they're about $800 roughly in the hole. And that's causing them a lot of grief right now, especially with their investors. But, you know, it's a long-term business strategy, so, of course, right now it doesn't matter as much. But, RC, I want you to repeat your take on what you said about the damage that DFS is actually going to do for the NFL, because I thought that was a great point that you made. And then we'll, you know, talk about a couple other things and wrap it up.
Well, I'm kind of curious. You said you think that DFS will eventually damage fantasy football, but I kind of think what happened, there's always going to be like the core guys like you and I that got into this because we love the sport. But what DFS has managed to do is really attract kind of like these incremental casual players who more or less, you know, don't really care about the sport or follow it that closely, or, you know what I mean? And what I feel is that these new kind of incremental casual fans of DFS, they more or less, you know, equate players to the ping pong balls of like the state lottery, right? Because that's all the daily fantasy contests really are. So I think, you know, if DFS gets shut down, you'll lose, you know, that group, but do you really think it damages the core group of fantasy players?
Well, this is where it does, and I'll explain this in a minute here. But basically, right now, every year you have, you know, kids turn 13, turn 14, they get into sports. All of a sudden, they want to play fantasy sports. Obviously, those guys aren't going to be able to play DFS unless their dad plays it for them because you have to be 18. But the people who are a little older who decide to get into fantasy football around that time, the primary thing that they're seeing, because they're seeing it everywhere, is DraftKings and FanDuel. I mean, you know, you see 80 commercials during the football games. They're all over the Sirius radio, and they're all over radio in general. They're really putting a massive advertising campaign out, and they see these million-dollar prizes, which are all really kind of horse crap as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because that right there, like we've discussed, really, and this is the league's problem, and at some point, you know, in my opinion, they're going to, like, step in, unless it, at the moment it's, like, really lucrative for them. But at some point it's going to basically tarnish the reputation of the league, where Because that is right now, you know, one of the primary associations with the NFL. And maybe it detracts from all the, you know, some of the bad things, like, you know, the players beating up their girlfriends in elevators and stuff like that. So maybe it's a distraction from that stuff. But more or less, I mean, if you're trying to guard the reputation of the league, you know, certainly you don't want it so closely associated with something that can only be defined clearly as gambling, because that's what it is. Now, the economics of daily fantasy, as you described and we were talking about, that can't go on forever unless, you know, at some point, like next year, you know, the investors kind of start pulling away. And then they apply for a government bailout, and that would be the ultimate humiliation of you know, the whole deal right there. But the economics of the situation will really preclude this from going at the same speed as it's going this year. So this year really seems like the peak of it. And once again, I mean, I don't have a problem with it as kind of like a small kind of superficial activity, you know, that equates to like the occasional purchase of a lottery ticket, but to the point where it overwhelms and saturates, which is what it's doing right now, I think, then I think it's a problem. So that really needs to
die
down. Yeah.
No, they have saturated the market, and so all the new fans coming in are, you know, and they're making it seem like this is the most fun thing. I mean, that's what their commercials remind me very much of, a Viagra commercial where, or not necessarily Viagra, but, you know, one of the, you know, the drug commercials for Pfizer or something like that, where no matter what the drug is, no matter what the side effects are, I mean, anal bleeding can come out of the side effects, but those people are smiling, they're happy. The lady's dancing through the supermarket, even though she's saying you might have anal bleeding. So to me, that's what they're doing. They're just making it seem like it's a blast, you know, to play this.
Yeah, when you brought up the drug companies, which are very closely regulated, and that's why you basically have, you know, half the commercial dedicated to disclaimers and all the fine print, and then the guy, you know, going through all the horrible things that can happen to you if you take this thing. That's what's missing right now from the daily fantasy sports advertising, which is, and we were talking about this last week, right now it's really portrayed in a very unrealistic way, which borders on misrepresentation. So when they give like the example of the person who deposited a total of $35 and has won $2 million, the odds of that happening is about the same as getting hit by a train and then having a meteor drop on your head. And that right there should not be allowed for legitimate advertising. So
that's
part
funny,
of it.
RC. Yeah, really, my grandpa got hit by a train and hours later got hit by a meteorite. So I'm just kidding. No, I can't keep a straight face. No, keep going.
So basically, you know, it really needs to, the advertising needs to be toned down, and that will be really the next step that's going to hamper the advertising for fantasy, you know, these guys, which is like, look, you got to be more truthful. It's not going to go as far as the drug companies, obviously, but there's going to have to be some disclaimers thrown in there. They can't make it sound like so ridiculously unrealistic, which is what it sounds like right now.
No, absolutely, and you're right. I mean, right now it is, you know, they should put some disclaimers on. And really, since it's gambling, they shouldn't let 18-year-olds do it anyway. I mean, there's a reason why Vegas is 21 and above. They want a little bit more mature of a person to get into it. And that's another problem is that when you start getting 18-year-olds gambling, thinking that they're all awesome at fantasy football, then they're going up against sharks who are putting 500 entries into a contest and blowing everybody out, you know, it's no longer a game of skill. It's now a game of chance. And those experts who do that, you know, or those sharks are the same people here in Las Vegas who go sit at a table at a small casino and see all the tourists who come in and who all think they're just badasses at Texas Hold'em because they played online. And then they come in, they lose all their money, and that shark goes home with a whole bunch of money. Same thing happens in the fantasy sports realm. I do want to make one small observation to Mr. Mann to claim that he has some massive audience. I have to say this because I'm just, you know, I get really tired of hearing this. I get this kind of shoved down my throat because he's on Sirius Satellite Radio. Okay, Sirius Satellite Radio across Canada and the United States are the only two countries I believe they operate in, have about 29 million subscribers. Okay, if you take that out of the whole population of the country, I mean, I'm just going to say how many people, you know, are even paying attention to Sirius, you know, out of the, it's 8%. It's roughly 8% of the population of two countries, maybe actually about 7%. Okay, so you have 7% of the people, and that's assuming they're all actually listening to it and not just getting it free when they buy a new car. But you have 7% of the people who subscribe, just 7. All right? I get tired. I mean, I'm telling you this right now. You know, you're not you're reaching 7% of the fantasy footballers. So for you guys out there in serious land who think that everybody in the world is listening to you, they're not. In fact, you're probably not. You're not getting hardly any more listeners than any of the website gets visitors. So, you know, because I made that comment to him, and I said, listen, you know, this show right here and the guys behind this show probably have a stronger following after being in the business for 12 to 15 years than some of the people on that. First of all, I've never even heard of some of the people on Sirius, but as far as, you know, Jeff is concerned, his amazing numbers that he has, it's 7% of the population, 7%. And that means if you just equate that over to fantasy football, because you don't really have statistics and numbers on that, you're reaching 7% of the fantasy footballers. So I don't even want to hear that, you know, to think that, you know, you're reaching the whole crowd. So, and that's why I do agree with you, RC, that this is not going to be ultimately too destructive, because really the primary voice is coming out for FanDuel, which, by the way, is a British-born company. It's not an American company, just to let you know. So all their money they make leaves the country. But, you know, all the money being made for them is really, all the people on Sirius that are generating the revenue for them, it's really just they're only reaching, you know, a select number of people. So thank God for that. Thank God that hasn't taken off and that most people don't even know it exists. In fact, you know, I mean, I just don't know hardly. I don't know anybody. I know two people besides myself who listen to Sirius Fantasy Radio, and that's you and Jason Swift. I know nobody else. In all the leagues that I'm in, except the only league I didn't pull was my Blog Talk Radio league. But in all the leagues that I know that aren't expert leagues, obviously because experts know about everything, don't even know it exists. So out of all the regular people, so it's
no, but the, you know, but you can't deny that you know they do have a great deal of subscribers. You know, the Fantasy Sports Channel is a small part of the lineup, of course, because they need to compete with channels like, you know, Louis Anderson's Comedy Hits and the Caribbean Wind Chime channel, right? So they've got channels for everything.
Are you making fun of that channel? Are you making fun of that channel?
I know that's one of your. I know that's one of your favorites.
We got Kenny on the line. Kenny will not appreciate that. He is a Wind Chime fan.
I think the guys on the Fantasy Sports Channel are pretty good. I mean, I especially like the RotoWire guys and Pro Football Focus. If you ever heard of them, they're really good. So it's not a waste of time. But you know, as far as the numbers you're throwing out there in terms of people listening, I'm not, you know, I can't verify that. But you might have a point.
Oh no, I think most of the experts that I've actually heard of on it. Are great, like the football diehards, like you said, the RotoWire guys, and to be honest with you, with the Pro Football Focus, those guys have been very transparent in their reporting on this whole DFS thing. I read some articles they put up on their website. You know, a lot of them are really good. Obviously, I think there's some people in there that just got in there because they paid the money to be in there. There are a few of those, and that's fine, whatever. You know, you make it or break it. And, you know, and just to let you know, I mean, I checked out YouTube videos on some of these guys. I'm not going to mention any names. And the most video that had the most hits was 213 views. So it's whatever they're doing. I get blasted because I open my mouth. I speak my mind. And all the listeners who have been listening to us for 9 years know that I don't take any crap. And I speak my mind. And I don't mind getting myself into a grudge fight every once in a while. It raises my heart rate and puts a few extra gray hairs in my hair, but I'm used to that. I'm good with that. But what I didn't appreciate was being told by somebody like Mr. Mann that I wasn't in the industry, that I had, you know, no effect on it, things like that, and that I was really basically a nobody. And as a matter of fact, the Halifax Expert League, I always say the Halifax Expert League that we're in, you know, with 16 incredible teams, and I think, in fact, you have a SiriusXM expert in that league. I know he's in one of our leagues. You know, that's hogwash. That's hogwash to sit here and you know, to act like, you know, oh, you're some amazing human being when you have 7% of the country listening to you. Is that? I mean, if you even have that 7% listen to Sirius. Now, what percentage of that? By the way, Sirius has not released numbers on individual channels, because I checked for that. But then also, you just got to compound into there the fact that, you know, they don't get any, you know, real following on any other, you know, aspect. And like, look at YouTube. If they're so good at marketing, you know, their YouTube videos. I'm not going to mention any names, because I don't want to certainly make it sound like I'm attacking any individual person. But they don't get any views. So it, to me, it's all a bunch of, you know, it's the same thing that's been, the same game that's been going on. And it's like, you know, we used to all kind of work together, except for the jerks in the industry who wanted to, you know, firebrand everybody. But, you know, we always kind of work together and be buddies. And now it's kind of separated. And now it's really separated into this DFS class and this traditional fantasy football class. And it's becoming, you know, who's being paid by DraftKings and who's being paid by FanDuel. And that's, I'm going to leave it at that. You know, you're going to know. If somebody's talking up FanDuel and won't stop talking about it, and everything they talk about, if they're talking about the true value of a player, the true competitiveness of a player, looking into the defenses he's playing and looking into the schemes he's good at, and just really getting, you know, into, you know, the actual team the player's on. Instead, now they're looking at, he's a good value at $5,400. He's a good value at $8,500. That's all you get now. And I think that's disingenuous, especially when those same experts are sitting there saying, oh, I'm playing in these leagues, so I'm going to tell you everybody to start because I'm putting thousands of dollars into these leagues and I'm going to help you beat me. That's just not true. They're not doing that. And there's something wrong there. And I think that, and I'm going to finish it with this. I do believe that every single person on SiriusXM Radio should not be playing in FanDuel. They should not be playing. They should be considered employees of FanDuel and not play, just like the real employees of FanDuel can't play. I'm going to wrap it up on that, RC, and we'll get to the show. But you can go ahead and respond. What do you think of that? What do you think of banning, not me personally, but FanDuel saying, hey, I don't want you guys on Sirius playing because you're supposed to be advising the real players?
I'm not sure that's necessary, you know, because those guys are just guessing like anyone else. I do want to bring up a situation that's more relevant to traditional fantasy leagues and give props to somebody on SiriusXM, our friend Tony Sincotta, who I think we both agree is a good guy, also a very smart guy. And I was listening the day of actually the Monday night game, because remember the big issue there was whether Odell Beckham Jr. was going to play. And I had one league where I had a situation where I had Odell Beckham Jr., and he didn't practice all week, so I picked up Josh Huff. And what my plan was to, you know, wait until official word came out, and then to plug in Josh Huff if DBJ, you know, couldn't play. So I'm listening to Tony Sincotta that morning, and he followed Scott Engel. Scott Engel gave the advice, which at the time I agreed with, was like, look, you know, you're not really sure what's going to happen with Odell Beckham. So, you know, if you got someone like Josh Huff, then, you know, plug him in to get the certain points. And in this league, I was only down by about 4.5 points. So I figure, all right, I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to play Josh Huff. Tony Sincotta basically said, I completely disagree with that. And if you drafted Odell Beckham Jr. and he is on the field, then you absolutely must play him and you shouldn't consider any alternatives. I can't disagree with that. I mean, because, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. is a superstar, and if he's playing, then he should give you the best chance to win. So long story short, I plug in Josh Huff because I just needed 4.5 points. If I needed more than that, I would have taken the chance on Odell Beckham. I lose by, and this has got to be the smallest margin of victory ever in the history of weekly fantasy games, by less than a tenth of a point I lose by, because Josh Huff gets about 4.45 points because he spends, you know, I guess most of the second half nursing some kind of shin injury or whatever was going on. where, of course, Odell Beckham Jr. in the first 30 seconds scored a touchdown. So just to give props to Tony Sincotta, who completely called that correctly, and this is a lesson for all of us, which is, you know, if you've got one of your superstars and you're on the fence about starting him, and he's playing that game, regardless of whether you think he might be used as a decoy or re-injure himself, and, you know, chances are you're going to do better with your superstar than some slimy scrub like Josh Huff on the psychotic Eagles, where you have no idea what's going to happen. You have no idea who's going to be running the ball, passing the ball, catching it, kicking even. You know, they might change kickers, you know, during the game. So there's a lesson in there
No, there's a lesson in there. And that is solid advice, but it's basic advice. I mean, you know, the basic advice we've always gave is don't ever bench your studs. And I made the exact opposite mistake, or the exact same mistake. But it was, you know, I was driving home Thursday when the Colts were playing last week, not this week, but last week, and they were playing on Thursday against Houston. And I was just listening. I was on the obviously I wasn't starting Andrew Luck if he was out, but I have Luck and T.Y. Hilton on the team. And I was deciding whether or not I should take out Hilton and put in someone like Pierre Garçon, who was my backup on that team, because I just worried about what he's going to be able to do against in Houston and with the trouble he was, you know, without Luck. And I listened to one of the experts on the show and basically said I wouldn't start anybody on the Colts. Anybody. Bench the whole team. So finally, when I'm on the edge like that and I'm just like walking the tightrope with what to do, you hear advice like that. You say, okay, well, I'm not the only one in the world who maybe thinks I should bench T.Y. Hilton. Well, I benched T.Y. Hilton and I lost, and I think I mentioned this last week, I lost to Jason Swift by 4 points, and the difference between between T.Y. Hilton and Pierre Garçon is about 4.8 points. So I would have won. I mean, that's in a home league. That's in a money league. That I lost in. So, and I learned that lesson. And of course, you know, I followed up this week and I benched Andrew Luck for Sam Bradford. Luckily, the rest of my team dominated and I powered through that mistake. But either way, you shouldn't.
I understand the T.Y. Hilton Garçon situation because I can kind of see why you did that. But why in the world would you bench Andrew Luck for Sam Bradford? By the way, have you noticed that Sam Bradford is a god-awful quarterback? And, you know, at this point, I have no idea why he's really still starting. He should be like a career backup at this point.
Absolutely.
Why would you do that?
It was a strategic move. Basically, Sam Bradford was a Monday game, and we got to get the candy back to this. But, Andrew Luck was a Sunday night game. So, basically, most of the players were done. I think he had Ruben Randall and DeMarco Murray left on his team, and I still had Donnell and then my quarterback left. So I decided, I said, listen, this is the Patriots. The Patriots are pretty angry at the Colts. Are they going to come out hammering on them? Is this going to be a really ugly game for the Colts, you know, especially with Luck coming back from his first game and not being maybe 100% from his injury? I was concerned about all that. So I said, listen, I don't need that many points. I had like a 15-point lead. And I had a quarterback, which, you know, in this league, quarterbacks have a little extra pop. And I'm just going up against the big bad DeMarco Murray and Ruben Randall. So I said, you know what, I think I can hold them off. And I'm going to go with the conservative approach. Same advice we give Kenny, where I say, if you need the points, you go with the big gun. If you need to be conservative, go with Bradford. And Bradford got me enough points. I ended up winning that game by about 15 points. So basically Bradford and Donnell equaled Murray and Ruben Randall, and I ended up winning that game. I'm sorry, he actually outscored me by about 5 points, that last minute touchdown by Murray. So I think I only beat him by like about 10 points. But the end result is that I still won, but that's why I made that decision. And I will never make that decision again. I think Luck is back on pace to be the quarterback we expect him to be. You know, he's healed, hopefully, from whatever injury he had. And for him to be able to put on the points he put up against the Patriots, I think he's ready. So that's why I did that.
All right, okay.
Let's get over to Kenny real quickly here and get the, you know, and see how he did. Kenny, how you doing? Kenny? Uh-oh. There's oops.
We got some old-timey piano going on.
Yeah, and I accidentally hung up, but I didn't know how to mute it. But I guess he was dead. We had him on hold for about 20 minutes. He'll call right back, and we'll get him back on. So I wanted to ask you about, we were talking about Melvin Gordon earlier, and I know you're going to get to these injuries. And I wanted to ask you, you know, you obviously saw what happened to Gordon this game, you know, a couple of fumbles, gets hurt his ankle. What's the story on him?
Well, I think, you know, he's really been held back by a offensive line that's been kind of decimated. And he really seems to be the kind of runner that is going to spend most of his time trying to pick the holes. And I don't mean this as an insult, but so far he reminds me a little bit of Monty Ball. I think he's a little more talented than him, but Monty Ball, you know, when you watched him, was always kind of like, you know, grab the ball, run to daylight in you know, wherever you might see it. It might be in the back of – you might end up, you know, running to the back of your own player. But that's been basically how he's been operating. And I think that may be a function of, like, you know, the big holes he had at Wisconsin, and maybe he needs to adapt to the game. He does seem to have, very good acceleration when he's doing that. Before he was benched, he actually did have, a 25-yard run. So, you know, he was showing some progress, but certainly that fumble that he got benched for was pretty bad, because he basically ran, you know, straight forward, like he was shot out of a cannon, and not looking at what was going on, and a linebacker came in and knocked the ball out of his hand. And it was a bad fumble, and he deserved to get benched.
I mean, you know, that's my argument, that rookies are rookies, and they're going to make their mistakes. And they, you know, the question is, going forward, is he going to be a genuinely good fantasy football running back?
Well, we might have to wait a little bit on that. I think they're going to stick with him. You know, certainly this week, you know, people are going to stray away from him. I would think you might even see him dropped in, you know, a fair number of leagues, maybe a small number of leagues. But, you know, I'm going to stick with him because, you know, like you mentioned, Danny Woodhead's great, and he certainly fits into the San Diego offense in the way that it is right now, which is that you need to make your own space. You cannot basically you can't be looking for the offensive line to be making holes. Because, now they're getting a little healthier, but up until this point, they just had, you know, second and third stringers in there, it seems. Where Danny Woodhead would, you know, if there wasn't a hole, you know, he could bounce outside, and he's very nimble and shifty and, you know, very good as a receiver. And that's why Danny Woodhead really fits into this offense in this situation. But as the Chargers get healthy and are able to run a more, you know, traditional running game, Melvin Gordon should increase in importance. And I think, you know, certainly maybe over the last half of the year, I think he'll be pretty good. So don't give up on him. You know, right now, though, is certainly going to be a little bit of a rough patch, because we're not exactly sure how he's going to be, because we did see Brandon Oliver being mixed in there this last game. To basically replace what Gordon was supposed to be doing. So we got to keep an eye out for that. But certainly Gordon, you know, is a different level than Oliver in terms of talent. So that should basically win out over the longer term. But, I mean, this week, if someone said they were going to bench him, I couldn't argue with that. I would say if you got a better alternative, then you know, surely you'd have to use it.
Absolutely, and at this point, I would recommend, you know, benching Melvin Gordon. I'm not going to sit here and say go out and pick up a Brandon Oliver, because I'm going to say this. I mean, granted, he's a rookie, and I know Brandon Oliver isn't, you know, he's not obviously not a rookie, but he's not exactly an aged veteran himself. But the struggles that that team has, you're absolutely right. I've been along that offensive line where they've, you know, sustained injuries to two or three of the members of that line. And like I said, I think they got one back last week, and hopefully they're going to get some more back this week, if not both of them. But regardless, it's troublesome for anybody in that running game. And so Danny Woodhead is the best successor for that job, because he'll go in there and he'll catch passes, and he'll do run, like they say, run plays that are really pass plays, and you know, and or pass plays that are really run plays, like screens and stuff like that. And Danny Woodick can excel at that. So can Brandon Oliver. I mean, he's pretty good at that himself as well. But I'm going to stop short to say, hey, go and cut an actual important player for somebody along the lines of for Brandon Oliver, because it could be a short-term solution while they figure out the problems with Melvin Gordon, because he's a number one draft pick. They invested a lot into him. They're certainly not going to give up on him. There's no benefit whatsoever for the San Diego Chargers to just all of a sudden, you know, up and put him as a backup after only, six games in the season. So, you know, they're going to, you know, maybe rest him this week, you know, depending if he's actually able to come out and play, give him light work, and then hopefully get his confidence back up and get him running well and, you know, and work with him, and he should develop. I mean, he could be one of those guys that can come on like the last 6 weeks, the last 6 games of the season, and end up dominating.
Yeah, RC? I agree. That's definitely possible, sure.
Yeah, all right, so we'll definitely keep an eye on that with him. Now, another topic I want to bring up before we get to the injuries is, there's a lot of talk about defenses. I mean, you know, this is going to be a somewhat tough week for fantasy football defenses, RC, because you have pretty much one of the top defenses in the league, certainly from NFL standards, and I wouldn't doubt from fantasy standards either, in the Denver Broncos that are going to be on the bye. Then you have, of course, Cincinnati, which has been another solid fantasy defense for anybody using them this year as well. You know, and then above that, you also have Green Bay's defense, which has been, you know, especially at home, just been awesome. And then, of course, you got the mighty, mighty Chicago Bears, almost like Cubs, Bears. Bears, right? Not Cubs? Because they're playing like Cubs. But the Bears, right? And we'll talk about the Mets and the Cubs in a second, okay? I know you're just dying to talk about it. But, you know, so you have those three defenses off. So I wanted to ask you, and this is the advice I'm going to give. If you're everybody's hot and head over heels for the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, they seem to be the number one trending picked-up defense because they're outplaying whatever all the expectations, and they are playing very well. Granted, they've done it against some so-so teams, but they still managed to play very well, and they've played themselves into a complete fantasy viability. But there's a surprise team out there that I'm wondering what you would think, RC, because I'm going to give you my little take on the Dallas Cowboy defense, because they're a sneaky play this week. I mean, obviously, they haven't been the best defense. They have played, you know, they played some solid games and some not solid games. They've given up some points, especially against the New England Patriots. Who doesn't? But here's the ticket here. They just got Greg Hardy back and Rolando McClain back last week, who finally got their first game of, games of action in as Dallas Cowboys in 2015. Now this week, now they get a whole week of rest, so everyone's healthy. Sean Lee is now, you know, much further separated from his concussion that he received in the Eagles game. No, it wasn't the Eagles game. I'm blanking on which game it was. 2 weeks ago, that game that they lost, the Falcons game. So the Saints game. There you go. When he went out in the Saints. So they lost, you know, he's getting 100% healthy. You got Rolando McClain now back in at the speed. You got Greg Hardy in there. He's going to be a pass rush machine. But the kicker is they're also getting this week back Randall Gregory, their second-round draft pick, who had a very good first week of the season, was very dominating for a rookie, and then they lost to a high ankle sprain. So he's back. And so now they're playing the New York Giants, and it's a must-win game for the Cowboys. It's one of those games where they have to win it. That's why they're going to be changing the quarterback and even, you know, giving Christian Michael more play. So they're doing all of this stuff to really win a must-win game. I mean, I think going into this game, all the momentum is going to be at the Cowboys, and they're playing against Eli Manning. And what's the one thing Eli Manning cannot handle? And that's pressure. He is not good at pressure. You know, when you get into his face, he just chucks the ball. He gets sacked a lot. And now you have the Cowboys coming in with two really, you know, all-pro level linebackers, you know, because McClain played marvelous last year. And then, of course, Sean Lee, you know, nothing that has to be said about him. And then, of course, now you have on the end, besides DeMarcus Lawrence and the rest of the crew in the middle there, you've also now got Randall Gregory and Greg Hardy. Is this a good sleeper defense, RC, to go pick up, especially if you have one of those three defenses on the bye?
Well, I think you know, I can't argue with what you're saying, but certainly if you want to go after the Cowboys defense, they should be available in your league. Like, I'm checking the available, you know, and I can't argue with you on defenses because more often than not, you're correct. But, I mean, there's a couple of defenses that I'd probably recommend before them. But, yeah, like I'm seeing Cowboys defense, you know, like, for example, in Yahoo leagues, we're probably both in, you know, a lot of them. I'm actually in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The only places where Dallas is taken is in two of the leagues that you're in, and you're the guy who picked them up. So if you want to go after the Dallas Cowboys defense, they're probably going to be there 90% of the time. I can't, you know, you brought up some great points about some players that are being overlooked that are coming back, and you're right about, you know, being able to pressure Eli Manning, and that could actually, you know, cause the kind of mistakes that get you defensive points. But if you want to stay safe, I think there's a number of defenses. You know, the Steelers certainly are a popular choice, and for good reason, because they're going against Kansas City, and they've also been pretty active in terms of like sacks and interceptions. They're averaging about 4.3. The Vikings might be available. They're going against Detroit, and they've been very accident prone. Falcons, I think, are a sneaky play. Browns might be available in your league. A team like the Rams might be available in your league because they're coming off their bye week. And then, you know, there was one league where I actually picked up Tampa Bay against Washington. And, you know, because let's face it, with defenses, some of it is a crapshoot because, you know, certainly a lot of it, you're kind of hoping for some kind of defensive touchdown. You know, like, for example, Buccaneers have a 20% chance of getting a defensive touchdown. Falcons have a 50% chance. Cardinals have been very good with, and when I say defensive, I also mean special teams. Seahawks are 67% chance. Cardinals, 67% chance. These are teams that are already picked up.
What about the Dolphins? The Dolphins just got their new defensive coordinator, came back last week again against a somewhat subpar Tennessee team. You know, so Tennessee's been good and bad, and it was at Tennessee, mind you. It was, you know, so they're on the road. They put up 6 sacks, 2 interceptions, 2 fumble recoveries, and a touchdown under the new defensive coordinator. I mean, Dolphins were a top-rated defense, top-10 defense when the season started, and they've obviously underperformed heavily, and that's understatement there. So now you got the Dolphins coming off a real strong performance. Now they're going home against the Texans and Ryan, and whoever is going to be Mallett. I mean, who's going to be throwing the ball for Texans? That's the always up for grabs. But what do you think there, Hoyer? You know, what's going on there? Is that a good start? It could be a team end up keeping.
It could be what? A team you
could
keep.
Be a team you end up sticking with. Yeah, you just stick with them the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's a good call. I actually have them ranked number 11 this week. Mostly, I mean, they've been a little bit light on the sacks and the interceptions. They average about 2.8. Fairly good on special teams and defensive touchdowns at 40%, and pretty good on not allowing points at, you know, well, about average. They average about 22 points against. But, yeah, that's a good call because of, like, who they're playing. So because of the matchup with Houston, I think they're a fair bet to do pretty well. I've actually got them ranked higher than the Jets, for example, this week because, you know, the Jets, of course, are playing New England, and no one's been able to stop them, and I doubt the Jets are going to be able to as well. But, yeah, Miami's a good call, and I think you're right. You know, they could be a team that you end up sticking with.
Yeah, listen, the thing with the Cowboys, I mean, by the way, the two leagues that I have the Cowboys in, I've had them all year. Because, I mean, obviously I know they have this up-and-coming defense, and even though their secondary is still, that's their weak spot is their secondary, even with the, you know, the Byron Jones being added to the team as a number one draft pick. But losing Scandrick was obviously devastating. Of course, then they have Claiborne and Carr who are underperforming D-backs. they have decent safeties out there. The problem with them is they haven't been able to generate turnovers at the rate you would like to see from a fantasy team. But this is they're playing a team. They're coming, you know, they're taking on the Giants, who just got routed by the Eagles and had turnover after turnover against really a lesser Eagle defense. Granted, it was in Philadelphia. Got to be fair with that, because it's always tough to go to Philadelphia and win. I mean, no one's about the only team that can do it effectively. It's the Cowboys. But that being said, I think that is a good matchup. I mean, I obviously, just to let you know, in our home league where I have the Bengals, I picked up the Dolphins. So I thought the Dolphins were a better pickup than both the Steelers and the Cowboys. So we'll see how that goes. Now, that doesn't mean that by Saturday I won't change my mind and pick up the Steelers or the Cowboys, assuming they're still available. But right now I like the Dolphins matchup, and I'm willing to take a shot at them on a bye week. And if I find success with them and they have another great week, you know, I always like teams that, you know, drop to the bottom. You know, it's like with Melvin Gordon. He's the worst he can be. He can only go up. Really, he can only go up after fumbling and getting injured and doing nothing. There's only sky above him to go. So, you know, when you grab a team like the Dolphins, they're really trying to, you know, work hard for their new coaches, and they're really trying to get back to where they should be as a dominating team. It's still early enough in the season where they can turn it around and make the playoffs and make some noise in the playoffs. So this is a team that's fighting. And the same thing, actually, I'm trying to say about the Cowboys. They're going into a division game, and they're 2-3. The Giants, I believe, are 3-3. So are the Eagles are 3-3. So they have to win this game to get back, at least temporarily. I mean, it depends what the Eagles do. But get on top of that NFC East division, and lose to the Giants right now will be pretty bad for them to lose their fourth game in a row. So I think they're going to be a surprising sleeper pick, but particularly in deeper leagues. I mean, again, a lot of those teams that RC mentioned are probably more stable starts, but if those guys aren't available, the Miamis, you know, the Browns, and those kind of guys, I really don't think the Browns are a better start. I got to disagree with that in RC. But still, if they're available, go do what you got to do. But if you're in a deep league and the Cowboys are available and that's about your only choice, don't be afraid to take them. They might really surprise you I'm telling you right now, RC, let's do an over-under. Let's do our bet. How many sacks do you think the Cowboys will get on Eli Manning in that game? What's your prediction?
Let me see what he usually gives up. I don't think he's been that bad this year in terms of giving up points to fantasy defenses, but let's see. New York has given – you know, believe it or not, he's – the Giants have only given up 7 sacks all year. To put that in perspective, the team that's the worst is Kansas City. Well, no, I'm sorry, Seattle's been worse, which is a little bit surprising, but maybe not. I mean, that offensive line is just horrible. Kansas City's really bad at 23 sacks so far. Cleveland has been very bad at 22. But the Giants have only given up 7 sacks. You know, so that, I mean, it doesn't look like a great matchup, but, you know, you never know. And by the way, that's through 6 games. I mean, some teams have only played 5, obviously. But so that's a little bit over a sack a game, you know. So they've actually been pretty good.
So give me a number. I'm asking for a number.
Oh, how many sacks that the Giants will give up this game?
Yes.
I'm going to say just 2.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to go four.
Okay.
All right. And we'll see who's obviously we have, you know, 3 would be a tie. And other than that, you know, that's basically the over under, I guess, is 3 in the world of handicapping out here in Las Vegas. So we'll say the over under. I'm taking the over. You're taking the under. We'll see. That'll be our bet of the week, RC. All right. I want to talk about the Steelers now. Really quickly. Well, actually, you know what? Let me see how much time we have, because we're going to have to only do – we're going to get about 20 minutes left in the show. We can talk about the Steelers, RC, if you want to, because I want to kind of talk about their revitalization of their offense, you know, Landry Jones coming in, Ben Roethlisberger coming back soon, Martavis Bryant, all that stuff. If you want to talk about that, we can, or we can go right to your injury list.
No, you can talk about the Steelers if you want.
All right, well – this is a team that is, first of all, coming into the season, had just a marvelous offense that they had, would have had fantasy gold written all over. Really the best fantasy team, you know, in the league. There's, I don't think there's anybody close top the Steelers have with Brown, Bell, Bryant, Roethlisberger, and then you could throw in the sub players like Wheaton and Miller, and, you know, just as the minor players in that offense. Huge offense. Obviously took a huge shot with Ben Roethlisberger. But last week we finally got to see Martavis Bryant come back after missing 4 weeks for suspension and then being injured 1 week, came back and had an outstanding game, but didn't catch any touchdowns from Michael Vick. He caught them from the third-string quarterback, Landry Jones. I'm going to admit one of them was a pretty bad throw that Martavis Bryant made a massive, awesome catch on. But then on his big touchdown catch, he made just an amazing move and just sunk the whole defense there, and of course caught the long bomb. Number one, RC, are you as high as I am? Because I drafted Martavis Bryant in a lot of leagues, and that's why I'm kind of suffering in some of my leagues, because I've been waiting for one of my draft picks to come through. Now I have him, but on this offense, give us the update on Ben Roethlisberger, because I mean, there's a possibility he might practice this week. I highly doubt it, but he might. But give us that, what's going on with him, and then give us your take on, the Bryant and the rest of that defense or offense going forward. And then you can even talk about the defense, but we kind of covered it a little bit.
We were talking about this last week. Bryant was, somebody that was, flying a little bit under the radar because, he had been gone from the opening of the season. And, and this goes back to like preseason, him versus Wheaton, and he really just seems like they're a superior option. He's just more consistent, where Wheaton will disappear, for long stretches, and then like we saw a couple weeks ago, just catching a long touchdown out of nowhere. Kind of reminds me of how Devery Henderson used to be in the Saints offense. Or, Kenny Stills was in this, so that's what Wheaton kind of reminds me of. But Bryant seems to be a legitimate number two that's worthy of playing across from Antonio Brown. And plus, of course, he benefits from playing across from really the best. Right now, he seems really the best receiver in the league. So, yeah, Bryant is a very strong acquisition. You're not going to get him, I think, this week. You might, maybe there's some leagues where people are still sleeping on him, but certainly he's going to make a big difference. Landry Jones looked okay, really was not that much of a drop-off from Michael Vick, so they should be fine with him. We have seen a very significant drop-off for Antonio Brown, because, Roethlisberger is just an elite quarterback, and that's very hard to replace, and once he comes back, then Antonio Brown's going to go back to the stratosphere where he belongs. And then Le'Veon Bell, regardless, he's kind of impervious to any of this stuff because they're going to continue using him in the same way. Their defense has been pretty good. I mean, they're very surprising, actually, because it didn't look like it, and they're missing one of their better linebackers, too, who is like always seems to be hurt. But they basically have been averaging about 12. No, I'm sorry. That was last week. Last week they had 12 fantasy points, but, through six games, they have, for example, 17 sacks, which ranks in about the upper third of the league. That's a little bit surprising. I mean, the score allowed has been pretty good. Only 108 points through six games, which is very solid. So they've been a pretty good defense. And once again, that's without they're missing the rookie Ryan Shazier, who is doing his best Sean Lee impression. In that he gets hurt like extremely often, unfortunately. But when he's on the field, he's a monster. I think he's only been on the field like one game this year. I think it was week two, and he had 12 tackles. So once he gets back, if he can get back to full health, that defense is going to get even better.
Absolutely, and it's just one of those teams that, again, you know, we knew they were going to have an offense. We figured their defense was going to suffer, but that has not been the case. In fact, their whole team is playing well. They're winning with third-string quarterbacks. The Steelers are the real deal this year, and that's a shame. I kid. I'm a Cowboy fan. That's great, and, of course, so if you have those players, another great week to play them. All right, RC. Shoot me some injuries that we could talk about.
Okay, no shortage of injuries as usual. Deion Lewis for the Patriots is limited at the moment. I would say he's probably safe to start if you need him. But, you know, remember also he's going against the Jets, who have been very, very difficult for running backs. If you've got a better option, this is a good spot to maybe stay away from him. Reuben Randall and Odell Beckham did not practice at all. But then again, he didn't do that last week either. As a matter of fact, he didn't practice any of the days last week and still managed to be fine. So maybe the Giants' new tactic with him is just resting him. Adrian Peterson has a finger problem, but that's nothing to worry about. Antonio Gates didn't practice today. Looks like he has a knee injury that he's sustained on the final drive of the game. They're saying that it's not going to keep him out, but that's something to keep an eye on. And then the other big injury for the Chargers is Keenan Allen, who injured his hip. And they don't expect him to practice much, but he should be playing in the game this week. But, you know, both those guys, I think you got to keep an eye on. And certainly if both those guys are out, that's going to kill the Chargers. Especially with, if they're throwing in Brandon Oliver in there instead of Gordon, that's going to basically really hold them back. What do you think about Gates and Allen? You think they're going to make it?
I certainly believe that Gates will play. I think, the injury to Antonio Gates is, he's the kind of player who's always played, through injuries. And right now it is a knee injury, and he did injure it on the, I think it was the last drive of the, of the whole entire game. But I think he was obviously winning at that game. You got to remember, he's only been back for two games. But I think, listen, this is a team that really kind of needs to get the win. I mean, the San Diego Chargers, first of all, are just a very well-coached team, very well-run team. So I think if he can get on the field, he's going to play. He's one of the tougher tight ends in the game. So I have no doubt, even though his status is questionable, that he will be on the field this weekend. And I own him in a few leagues, and I will certainly play him.
Okay. With the 49ers, Anquan Boldin is questionable. He is expecting to play. But once again, they're going up against Seattle, so that's probably a guy you want to stay away from. And Carlos Hyde is also questionable. And, of course, this is a game coming up tomorrow night against Seattle. He has a foot problem. And, what do you feel about Hyde? I mean, that's a guy that I guess, definitely pay attention to whether or not he's active, because that's coming up quick. But if he is active, I mean, would you play him?
Well, of course I would. I mean, granted, he's going up against a tough defense this week. But it's been a defense that's now, I think, is getting exposed. And their confidence that they used to have of just, utter domination, I think, is over with. I mean, everything comes to an end in the NFL. People age, and teams, eventually, fall from the hill. And the Seahawks are going to be one of those teams that are going to have a struggle staying afloat, any longer as this dominant, team in the NFL. So, this is a guy. And besides, I think Carlos Hyde is kind of one of those guys that you start every week. And also, just bear in mind, it is not in Seattle, so that's a little bit advantageous. for Carlos Hyde. But if the 49ers, as long as he plays, if the 49ers are going to have any success in trying to win this game, which is kind of a rival game, a divisional game for them, that he needs to have success. And they can't win this game without him. They're certainly not going to win it with Haynes or with Reggie Bush. They're going to have to win it with Carlos Hyde in the backfield. So, again, he's the same thing as Antonio Gates. Very tough player. If he could be out there, he'll be out there. To what I've seen about his injury, because I keep tabs on that because I own him so many leagues, he was basically my star running back that I drafted. Because I don't really take early running backs. I like to take third, fourth, fifth round running backs. And he was one of them. And so far, he's paid pretty decent dividends for me. I believe he's got like about 3 touchdowns on the season and about 300 yards already. So I like him and definitely would start him. And I think this is going to be a great test for him playing against a strong defense like Seattle.
Okay. With the Lions, Joik Bell is back to full health, it appears. Theo Riddick is a little bit banged up, but he should be okay. And this could really spell trouble for Amir Abdullah, I would imagine, who's really done nothing, and it's been very surprising. But Joik Bell coming back should cut into what Abdullah was doing, and what that was not much to begin with. So definitely puts a crimp on Abdullah's value with Bell coming back. Also with the Lions, they should get Eric Ebron back. He was actually very productive when he was healthy at weeks one through three. I mean, he looked like a borderline number one tight end. So he's limited right now, but he is scheduled to make it back for the game against the Vikings. With the Jaguars, both their main receivers are banged up. Allen Hurns, he should be fine. Allen Robinson had a little bit more serious injury. He was able to practice on a limited basis today, and they do expect him to play. Him and Hurns are expected to make it. And also Julius Thomas is, of course, back. The Jaguars' offense, all of a sudden, passing offense at least, T.J. Yeldon hasn't done anything noteworthy. By the way, he's also banged up, and he's more of a risk not to make this game. But Jaguars' passing game is actually looked pretty good.
No, that's not coming to too much of a surprise because they have a lot of talent on that team, just undeveloped talent as far as I've seen it, and especially in their quarterback and in their young running back, and and then they have Robinson and Hearns who. Or I think are still developing as top, into hopefully top flight running backs in the NFL. But there's a lot of talent, and adding Julius Thomas, to the offense is only going to bode well not only for T.J. Yeldon because he's a great run blocker number one and he's a big guy, but he's also going to open up the middle of that field, with his routes that he runs. And that's also going to open it up for the wide receivers. So getting Julius, sometimes people wonder, why do you sign certain players or why do certain players go to other teams? Well, in this case, it was a brilliant signing by Jacksonville because that's what they needed. They kind of needed a player that can open up, that can take some coverage in the middle of that field and pull it away from, stacking 8 men in the box and leaving them there. Or, of course, double covering with safeties on your wide receivers because that's all you have to be able to go to. I love it. So him coming back, if you have some Jacksonville players that, obviously they've been all right so far, this might be a great week to start him. Is he for certain coming back from the broken hand this week, RC?
Is who?
Is Julius Thomas for certain that he's going to play this week?
Yeah, he's been back, hasn't he?
He came back last week. I know he came back last week and he had limited snaps, though. So, I guess what I'm asking is he going to be on a full regiment this week?
I think so. I don't think there's anything holding back. Certainly, I think if you used him last week, you did okay. See what he did.
He was limited last week. They limited him, obviously, coming back his first week of action in the NFL. I believe he played a limited number of snaps, so I'm not – unless I'm confusing him.
Yeah, he had a very solid game. 7 catches, 78 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah.
Can't complain with that. So
no, and it's going to open up even more, and that's what I'm trying to say. You've opened up the middle of that field. You know, teams were not even probably planning for that kind of action. You pump him into that offense, and this is going to make it better. He's going to make Bortles better. He's going to make Hearns better. He's going to make Robinson better. And hopefully, you know, because we both are very high on Yeldon, he's going to make Yeldon better.
Yeah, I think so. Well, once Yeldon gets back. But once again, Yeldon, you got to be careful about it. He has not practiced today, and you got to see if he can make it at any point in the rest of the week. Deshaun Jackson still out. It doesn't look like he's going to make it back for week seven. Jeremy Maclin suffered a concussion over the weekend, and it looks like he might be held back. You know, he's very risky for making it Sunday against Steelers. And without him, I mean, and that's why the Steelers defense is looking better and better this week, because with no Maclin, no Jamal Charles, that is one sad offense. It truly is, you know. Jordan Reed looks like he's going to make it back. This guy just, it's a shame. He is just always injured, but when he does play, he's pretty damn good. So keep an eye on that. It looks like he should be able to make it back. Dez Bryant is nearing his return, which is exciting news for you, I'm sure. You know, he definitely has an outside chance to make it this week. I think he'll be closer next week, but that's good news. When do you see him coming back?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely hoping that he can obviously come back this week. I mean, the key for Dez Bryant is not that he, you know, comes back and all of a sudden puts up, you know, 8 or 9 receptions for 90 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's not what the Cowboys need. What the Cowboys need is someone to deflect attention from the running game and from Terrence Williams, because really what most defenses have been doing to the Cowboys is saying, listen, we're going to stack the box and we're going to go one-on-one on your wide receivers and try beating us. And it's been problematic because Terrence Williams is not that dynamic of a wide receiver. And either are Bryce Butler or Street or any of the other guys they have out there to put up against them, and teams that, you know, and then they stuff the running game, which is supposed to be so you know, outstanding this year with the three-headed dragon that they're going to have. Grant, they lost Dunbar. So I think if you got Dez Bryant out there and he started drawing double coverage and started, even if he was out there as a decoy, similar to maybe how Odell Beckham was being used at the end of the game 2 weeks ago for the Giants, where they came back on a last-minute drive and won. You know, if you do that kind of, not that, I mean, he actually was thrown to one, so, but it was apparent that he was a decoy after he got pulled out for the hamstring injury. You know, if you kind of want to risk Dez Bryant in that manner, you know, that's a risk, the calculated risk the Cowboys will have to take. But if you do put him out there, he draws coverage, he kind of opens up the field a little bit for the running game, opens up opens it up for a little bit for Terrence Williams and Jason Witten. You know, maybe the Cowboys' offense will run a little smoother. I mean, the loss of Dez Bryant is just as critical as the loss of Tony Romo, maybe a little less critical. But it's very bad because, you know, teams really don't fear the remaining Dallas Cowboy receivers, and they really shouldn't. So I'm hoping he'll come back, but it's what I'm, you know, really leaning towards is he'll be back next week, that they're probably not going to risk him for this game, and they're going to put the, like I said earlier in the show, they're going to put everything in on, you know, really that defense creating the problems for the Giants and then therefore giving the Dallas Cowboy offense some short fields to put in some touchdowns.
Okay. Over with the Bills, you know, they can't keep their two main receivers healthy. Sammy Watkins got hurt again, you know, this past week, actually on his score. He somehow injured his ankle. And Percy Harvin is not going to play this week. He's out. And it looks like almost a certainty that Sammy Watkins is going to be out as well. But I mean, what do you do with Sammy Watkins? At this point, you know, his ownership is very high, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a talented player. But, I mean, could you argue with, like, someone dropping him at this point?
Well, I mean, didn't he have a decent game this past week? Didn't he put up, like, I think 3 or 4 catches, 40 yards, and a touchdown this last week? Or am I
confusing
another player?
Yeah, no, he had a game.
Okay, good.
No,
okay,
no.
Because I obviously was misread Julius Thomas. But, no, there's a problem there. You know, there's a problem. They had a quarterback change. He doesn't have really the connection with this quarterback, the chemistry that he had in the past, and he's still a young player developing, and he does have some attitude like most diva wide receivers do. So there is that problem. Now, from a fantasy standpoint, I wouldn't necessarily drop him. I mean, I'm telling you right now, one of the biggest things I'm noticing in fantasy, I'm going to give away a little secret here, and I'm just kidding, it's not a secret. Man, if you look at your waiver wires, because of all the injuries of wide receivers, and because of obviously most leagues requiring you to have three or four just in the, potentially in the starting rotation with the flex position, they are incredibly thin. And then when you have a week like this week where you have the Packers off, which is like two or three wide receivers, you need four if you count Devontae Adams, gone. You have Cincinnati Bengals, that's AJ Green, Sanua, and Jones, gone. I mean, you know, then you have the Denver Broncos and their wide receivers, gone. And then you have the Bears and Alshon Jeffrey, and gone. So, you know, there's a ton of wide receivers off the field, not only through injury, but through bye week. And that's, you know, and it's causing a massive problem. So I'm going to tell you right now, if you even have a remotely decent wide receiver on your roster, I'd hold on to him, because depth at wide receiver, I think, is going to be, that's going to be a big problem, you know, all year. Just like at the beginning of the season, you know, depth at tight end was a problem because we didn't really know how many good tight ends there were going to be this year. Now it's just absolute depth with wide receiver. I mean, I'm looking right now, not right now, but I mean this week, because I'm losing so many players to the bye, and I mean, I'm fishing for nothing. There's nothing out there. I mean, again, I'm all in mostly expert leagues or listener leagues. I can't find hardly, I mean, you know, Haywood Bay is out there. Ooh, you know, but I'm looking at starting a whole bunch of two tight end sets this week due to some of the buys I have, you know, so it's troublesome. It's very troublesome. So I would hold on to Sammy Watkins is a short end of that.
Yeah, I agree too. But, you know, with him, it's like he's not going to play this week. He's off next week. So, you know, in certain situations, I couldn't argue with, like, someone just basically cutting bait with him at this point. You know, the other injuries, like Victor Cruz, you know, he's been out forever. You know, don't count on him back. And I think that really covers the important ones.
Let me give you one note on Victor Cruz, because we'll wrap up the show now, too. You know, he's not coming back this week, but he's looking like that he's going to be coming back next week. And that is a guy that, you know, you can't put a lot of stock into him. You don't know how well he's going to play or how ginger he's going to be. But like I said, with how light wide receivers are right now, you know, if you have a roster position and he's available, most leagues I'm in, somebody already has him on a roster. There's a reason for that. Because of the problem at the wide receiver position and the number of guys in the slot, you know, grabbing a hold of getting someone like him in the middle of the season and him maybe developing into a guy who's going to get you six or seven catches a game, you know, once completely healthy, and giving you a nice wide receiver to plug in for the stretch run of the season, that's not a bad idea. So if you could pick up a Victor Cruz, obviously don't count on him this week at all, and I wouldn't even put money on the table for next week. But after that, the Giants desperately need him back. I mean, Reuben Randall, his knees are about to explode. I mean, that guy, you have no idea the trouble he has with his knees. He doesn't even practice most of the weeks. You know, he gets very limited practice in. He's troublesome. I mean, they're like we talked about last week, the Giants are trying to sign anybody they can, a wide receiver. So they desperately want Victor Cruz back, and he will immediately become an impact player on that team as soon as they bring him back, RC. So that's if he can stay healthy. It's if he can stay healthy and get to full strength. That's when he can become potentially a good plug-and-play for your fantasy team, a good number three wide receiver, possible flex guy. I'm not going crazy on him, RC. I'm just leaving it at that.
Hey, by the way, talking about receivers that, you know, they're kind of a little bit scarce to find guys that are dependable. You know, one guy that popped up, you know, certainly this week was Stephon Diggs. Over for Minnesota, you know, this guy was a fifth-round pick this year. Really, you know, there was very low expectations for him to even make it onto the field, you know, over someone like Charles Johnson. But he might have surpassed Johnson on depth chart, and certainly he's had a couple of good games. And if he's still available and you need a receiver, he's probably right now the best thing out there to probably pick up.
Yeah, he's been heavily trending in all the leagues and across Yahoo and across CBS. I've seen that. I mean, he's definitely – I was not able to pick him up in any of the leagues that I was in. He's a fantastic opportunity. I'll tell you right now, like I said, any wide receiver you can get that's going to get, you know, upwards of 6, 7, 8, 9 targets a game right now should be on a fantasy roster because, I mean, it is just a graveyard out there trying to find a good wide receiver. So, yeah, your app has a great choice right there with Diggs. When people are looking at, seriously, if you really go out there and looking at in a strong league at wide receiver, you know, the selection of players you're going to see, RC, it's kind of sickening. I mean, when guys like, I mean, you know, you have the, you know, the guys who don't even really play, like Devontae Parker, he's sitting out there. The Brandon Colemans are sitting out there. You know, obviously, Philip Dorsett might be bouncing around and Kenny Britt and guys like that. But that's what you're going to see. And that's not the kind of players you want to put into your team. So hopefully, you know, you took my advice and RC's advice and drafted heavy and made sure you have plenty of wide receivers that covered these bad bye weeks. I'm not even kidding. I had to pick up Riley Cooper in the league. That's how desperate I am for wide receiver, RC. It's a 14-team league, but.
Well, you know, I wish I picked up Riley Cooper last week instead of Josh Huff. That would have been a good move.
All right, man. Let's go ahead and then put a wrap on this wonderful show, RC. Hopefully, I didn't batter your ear too much.
No, of course not. I love hearing your philosophizing about the DFS stuff.
Oh, it's fun. It'll just get worse and worse. I promise you.
Okay, that's something to look forward to. All right, but I don't play you, I don't think, in any league this week again, so that's good news.
That is good news for me, too, because you're always a tough competitor. So we've already played each other, 6 times now? We're 3-3. So we'll see how that pans out the rest of the year. And just be afraid of me in the half-ax league. Be afraid.
I will. You're doing better than I expected you to do, that's for sure.
You never have confidence in the RC. You just never do.
But it was a new format. It was a new format, so I didn't think you'd pick up on it so quickly.
I know. You underestimate. I live my life being underestimated by everybody, and that's what I love about it. All right, man. I will catch you next week, and have a great weekend, RC. The best of luck to you in all your leagues.
All right, you too, man. Take care.